What's happening in the impeachment inquiry? How the mastermind behind the college admission scandal built his cheating network.
This former USC soccer coach was really crucial in connecting Singer to quite a few other coaches, which then helped him work with his clients to get their kids into a variety of colleges.
And how drug-resistant superbugs are spreading and taking a toll.
It has complicated care for chronic conditions, people who need surgery, people with diabetes, people with cancer.
This is What's News for Thursday, November 14th. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. The first public impeachment hearing in two decades got underway in Washington Wednesday. Testifying were Bill Taylor, the acting ambassador to Ukraine, and George Kent, a senior State Department official. Wall Street Journal Executive Washington Editor Jerry Seib says Wednesday's five-hour-long hearing was split along party lines.
The first public hearing in the House of Representatives' impeachment inquiry against President Trump unfolded over five long hours on Wednesday. Democrats said the evidence clearly shows President Trump abused his power by withholding both military aid to Ukraine and denying the new president of Ukraine a meeting in the White House until the Ukrainians agreed to investigate what Democrats had done in Ukraine, and specifically what former Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter had done in Ukraine. And in that regard, there was one important bit of new information. There was testimony that Gordon Sondland, who was President Trump's ambassador to the European Union, placed a phone call directly to President Trump, filling him in on Ukrainian plans to launch these investigations, and that Ambassador Sondland told those who were listening that President Trump cared more about investigating the Bidens than he did about anything else regarding Ukraine. That puts President Trump more deeply into the question at hand. At the same time, though, Republicans said there was no evidence of any misbehavior because ultimately Ukraine got its military aid, and because it got that military aid without launching any formal investigations into the Bidens, so therefore, no offense. But the disagreement ran much deeper than that between Democrats and Republicans. They couldn't even agree on which presidential election in the United States was being interfered with here. Democrats clearly argued that the election at hand, the one that's coming up in 2020, was the one that was being interfered with by Ukrainians because President Trump wanted damaging information on Joe Biden, potentially his toughest Democratic opponent in that 2020 election. Republicans, by contrast, wanted to talk about the last election, the 2016 presidential election, and their assertion that Ukrainians had interfered in that election, both by leaking information about Paul Manafort, President Trump's then campaign manager, and work he had done and payments he had received in Ukraine, and by publicly criticizing President Trump for not being sufficiently anti-Russian. That's the interference that Republicans wanted to talk about. With disagreements that wide, it's hard to see how this impeachment process goes forward as anything but a totally partisan exercise.
The next hearing is planned for Friday, when former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch is slated to testify. While the impeachment hearing was going on, President Trump was meeting with Turkish President Recep Erdogan at the White House. At a joint press conference, Trump said he was a big fan of Mr. Erdogan. The Turkish leader, for his part, called for a new chapter in relations between the two countries. But there was no indication of headway on Turkey's purchase of the sophisticated S-400 air defense missile system from Russia, which has been a major concern for the Pentagon. And there appeared to be no sign of progress in attempts to end the fighting in Syria between Turkish-backed forces and the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, which had until recently partnered with the U.S. The parent of the office space startup WeWork reported more losses in the third quarter to the tune of $1.25 billion. Expenses far outpaced revenue growth, draining the company's cash ahead of a bailout by SoftBank Group. That was one factor that led investors to balk at WeWork's attempt initial public offering in September, resulting in the ouster of CEO and founder Adam Neumann. In a media call on Wednesday, Facebook reported gains in detecting and removing hate speech, child abuse imagery, and terrorist propaganda on its platform. More than 12 million pieces of child nudity or sexual abuse content were removed from the main Facebook platform and Instagram in the third quarter alone. But Facebook says such posts account for less than 0.04% of what users actually saw. CEO Mark Zuckerberg touted their systems for addressing these issues, saying they were more advanced than those of other internet and social media platforms. William Rick Singer is the admitted mastermind behind the sprawling admissions scandal, much of which involved parents committing fraud to get their children into elite colleges and universities. The Wall Street Journal says another key part of the scheme was Singer building a network of coaches from schools including the University of Southern California and Yale. Joining us with the story, a Wall Street Journal exclusive, is the Journal's Melissa Korn. Melissa, you began the story with Rick Singer reaching out to a USC soccer coach, and this really illustrates how his network functioned, didn't it?
Right. So my colleague Jennifer Levitz and I found that this former USC soccer coach, Ali Khosrowshahin, was really crucial in connecting Singer to quite a few other coaches, which then helped him work with his clients to get their kids into a variety of colleges, not just USC.
Well, how did this method work?
He started working with the former USC women's soccer coach in 2012, and Khosrowshahin has pleaded guilty to working with Singer, to taking bribes, for flagging students as recruited athletes even when they weren't. Even after he left USC in 2013, he kept working for Singer by serving as sort of a middleman, introducing Singer to, we know of at least a few of the other coaches that he introduced Singer to. We have Rudy Meredith, the former Yale women's soccer coach, Bill Ferguson, who had been at USC and then went on to Wake Forest as a volleyball coach, and others as well.
And besides Khosrowshahin, these other coaches have been charged and entered various pleas, isn't that right?
Correct, correct. And we found one other node that Singer worked through, and that was using a former employee of his at IMG Academy to introduce him to Gordy Ernst, the former Georgetown tennis coach, who's also been charged and pleaded not guilty.
Rick Singer attacked these coaches' vulnerable spots, didn't he? I mean, a lot of this indicates the differences between high-profile coaches and lower-level coaches.
Right. These aren't the football coaches earning $5 million a year here or $1 million a year. These are coaches in more low-profile sports who are working pretty grueling jobs, earning quite a bit less. For some, it's in the $50,000 to $70,000 range. For others, it is a couple hundred thousand dollars, but in comparison to the football and basketball stars, it's chump change. And they were also under a lot of pressure to raise money for their programs, for their teams, because these teams aren't bringing in much revenue.
What about Khosrowshahin? He was successful at one time. I think the USC women's soccer team, they went to a division playoff, but that was sort of in the aughts, the 2000s, but the team didn't do as well later on.
Right. So the USC women's soccer team had some years of success early when he took the helm, but the shine came off, as it does in a lot of programs. So the coaches' spots are vulnerable. You know, they lose enough seasons, they lose their jobs. And Singer kind of seems to have recognized that these coaches were a little concerned about where their next paycheck might come from, and having his money to fall back on seemed pretty appealing for some.
Let's rewind a little bit. Mr. Singer has pleaded guilty to, I guess, a myriad of charges. And what were they?
Right. So Singer pleaded guilty to four charges, including obstruction of justice, money laundering and racketeering conspiracy, and fraud conspiracy.
And parents made their own deals with coaches. Isn't that right?
Right. So there were some cases where parents were working with coaches to arrange bribes completely outside of Singer's orbit. So it shows that while Singer had this pretty extensive network, he wasn't the only one doing this, and people didn't need to work through him to get to what these purported corrupt coaches. So we know of at least one parent who worked with Gordy Ernst, according to prosecutors, and they say that the parent paid the former tennis coach's kids' private school tuition as part of payment. Again, Ernst has pleaded not guilty in all of this.
Isn't the key thing, or at least one of the key things, is Rick Singer, the mastermind, really relied on these middlemen?
He did. He could not have built out this entire network all by himself. He needed introductions. He needed these trusted middlemen to make these connections, to tell him, hey, this coach might be willing to play ball, literally and figuratively, perhaps. But a random stranger coming up and saying, hey, have I got a deal for you, probably wouldn't have worked quite as well for some of them.
Wall Street Journal reporter Melissa Korn, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
A new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention finds that the outbreak of superbugs, which are drug-resistant bacteria and fungi, is worse than previously thought. This is an update to a report back in 2013, in which the CDC sounded the alarm about the dangers of these bugs. Wall Street Journal senior writer Betsy McKay joins us with the story. So, Betsy, what are the latest numbers on infections and deaths caused by superbugs?
So this report found that there are nearly 3.1 million infections, and that includes 48,700 deaths every year in the U.S. from drug-resistant bacteria, fungi, and it also includes a pathogen known as C. difficile, which is not drug-resistant in itself, but it is fueled or kind of unleashed by use of antibiotics.
And the heavy use of antibiotics contributes to this higher toll?
Yeah, definitely. Heavy use, overuse of antibiotics, it puts pressure on bacteria and they develop their own defense mechanisms, which basically build resistance to these drugs.
And these superbugs are spreading beyond hospitals, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, for many years, they were confined largely to hospitals, and they are generally known as bugs that appear in hospitals. But they're spreading more now in other healthcare facilities, nursing homes, for example, and also just in communities.
How many superbugs are we talking about?
Well, the CDC identified 18 that it is particularly concerned about, and it ranked them. Some are urgent threats. Some are, you know, less concerning, but still of great concern. And they also identified a watch list of bugs which are not causing a major threat today in the U.S., but could easily.
But isn't there some good news according to this report? The number of annual deaths from drug-resistant bacteria and fungi has declined significantly since the last report?
What's happened since 2013 is that the number of deaths has fallen, and the CDC has said that's largely due to some really good efforts, strong efforts made by hospitals to reduce the spread of these infections in their hospitals, better cleaning, better use of antibiotics. And so that's where the reductions have largely come. But the number of deaths is still really crazy high.
And there are new superbugs popping up, aren't there?
Yeah, more bugs are definitely emerging from overseas. The last time the CDC did a report like this, there was a fungus known as Candida auris, which wasn't even really on anyone's radar. It was first found in Asia in 2009. Now it has spread all over the world, and it's really on everyone's radar. So these things crop up and start to spread really, really fast.
Isn't the big worry here, Betsy, besides the fact that these bugs can be fatal, that antibiotic-resistant drugs are complicating medical care for patients? Isn't that sort of the bottom line here?
Yeah, there are a couple things. One is that if you develop one of these infections, there may not be a drug that can treat you. You know, doctors may not have anything. It's sort of an arms race, right? New bugs emerge. Doctors find ways to treat them. They develop resistance to those drugs and then can't help the patients. The other problem is that it has complicated care for chronic conditions, people who need surgery, people with diabetes, people with cancer. They're more prone to infection, and so the risk of being infected with a drug-resistant bug is making it harder to take care of these folks.
Wall Street Journal senior writer Betsy McKay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And now some other stories we're watching today. Walmart, JCPenney, and Viacom report earnings before the bell. Fed Chair Jerome Powell will testify before the House Budget Committee a day after he told Congress's Joint Economic Committee that he saw little need to cut interest rates for a fourth time since July. In a speech this week, President Trump criticized the Fed for keeping rates high compared to nations in Europe that have rates below zero. On Wednesday, Powell said that very low or negative rates wouldn't be appropriate in the U.S., and he repeated his pledge that the Fed wouldn't take politics into account when making policy decisions. And a federal jury will begin deliberating today over whether former Trump advisor Roger Stone lied to Congress after a one-week trial that included testimony from several Trump campaign officials, hundreds of vulgar text messages, and many references to The Godfather. Mr. Stone is accused of lying to the House Intelligence Committee in 2017 to protect Mr. Trump, while lawmakers were investigating Russian meddling in the presidential race and possible coordination between the campaign and Moscow. And that's what's news for Thursday morning. I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.